Opinions expressed in the following program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.
Family-owned Palermo Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast, located at 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-531-8300.
Charred Gray by William J. Conkoleski. Some wonder why I sleep by day. At night, I shun my pillow. I'm plagued by creatures of charred gray, and where they come from, I don't know. At night, they come to take me away. Don't want to leave, don't want to go. But even if I beg to stay, does it matter? No, no, no. Can you preach and bang your drum and try to tell me where they're from? How can you tell me that they care? To put it plainly, you weren't there.
Angel, I was very alone. Seems I'm always alone. When they come to me in their silent tone, the three little men had brought me a friend. Why they did, I'm not sure. I felt so sorry for her. It was very dark. Seems it's always dark when they come to me, cold and stark. She was thin and pale, sallow and stale. I named her Angel, and they bid me farewell. It was very late, seems it's always late, when they come to me in my weary state.
Brought to you by WKTV. I'm your Ghost Hunters host, Wayne Preston Curtis Thomas. Welcome to a far out episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Podcast. As always, we ask that you please keep an open mind about things that you might not easily believe as we explore the mysterious. Join us on a remarkable journey of courage and strangeness, on a voyage into the final frontier as we explore the true life stories of the experiencer, William J. Conkoleski, as he shares his personal accounts of close encounters of the fourth kind. But first, let's meet our co-host, Zooming from Byron Center, Michigan.
I'm Brandon Jose.
And zooming in from Holland, Michigan.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kim Colleen. Welcome to the show.
And now, probably the most fascinating guest we've ever had on the show, I would say.
Thank you.
William J. Conkoleski, author, director of the Michigan chapter of MUFON, author of two books. I happen to own both of them. Experiencer, Raised in Two Worlds, and Experiencer, Two Worlds Collide. I've thoroughly digested both of these books. And we can't have Bill on without talking about his books, of course, and talking about MUFON. And then I have three pages of notes, Bill, so talk fast. Good to see you, buddy.
Oh, right back at you. Yeah, it's been a year since the second book came out. And that's great that you have me on the anniversary.
I know. What are the chances? Mm-hmm.
I was telling Kim about that, how you pointed that out. You were here 11-11 in the studio last year. And the book, really, I tried to make up a cover because it didn't have a book yet.
Yeah.
But Santa Claus brought me the book for Christmas, so I have read it since then. You've been on this show twice. You've been on Cryptic Frequencies. We almost did another Cryptic Frequencies where you and I got to talk a little bit about maybe some of the current events. But boy, where do you want to start? Like I say, we need to talk about MUFON and we need to talk about your books. So wherever you want to start.
I guess I'll start with this. So I see your hat, Wayne. Thank you for serving if you have served.
Well, this is in honor of my two nieces. They served in the Marines. Betsy and Belinda and their husband, David, were Marines. My father was in the Army. My brother was in the Air Force and Army. but I didn't. But this was for them. So yeah, happy Veterans Day to everybody out there, and thank you for your service to all my friends at 208, the Legion Post. Salute.
Mm-hmm. Also,
did you
serve,
Bill?
No, I did not. I have two brothers who were Marines, but and so I don't know if Kim or Brandon, if either of you served, but yeah, it's yeah. It, my dad was in Korea, but not really in Korea. He was in Texas. He never really went over there, but
My dad was in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah. Salute to all those veterans.
All of them. Mm-hmm.
It takes a special courage, but you've also demonstrated courage. Abducted the first time at 2 years old, and then about every 2 years after that into your 20s.
Where to start? You know, I'm going to start with the MUFON side of things, actually, because the other side... some of those stories about contact take a little bit longer to unpack. So this year we had a pretty interesting case in Linden, Michigan. It happened June 8th. We got a call from a gentleman. Usually when somebody calls us about their sighting and leaves a message on our voicemail, it's kind of lengthy. And they'll say, you know, I was driving on this road, and then I stopped, and then I saw this light go across, and then it went over the water, and then another 10 minutes I saw it, and then I wondered what, blah, blah, blah. You know, usually the people leave detailed messages about what they saw. This message was simply, call me. And sometimes I have gotten those before, but something in the tone of this guy's voice, you could tell he was deeply affected by what he had seen. So call him back. And he said that he had seen this strange thing by the side of the road. And in fact, it was on the ground. So me and a couple of investigators, our chief investigator, Daniel Snow, and John Budris, another one of our investigators, we went out to the site and met with the gentleman. And he told us of what had happened. He was driving to work at about 3:30 a.m. He works for the post office. And as he was driving in down this dark road, he saw on the side of the road, this silver monolith out a few feet, several feet, maybe about 15 feet or whatever off the road. And it had four white lights moving around it. And then as he passed it, he's like, you know, he's obviously very shaken, like, that is so weird. And then behind him then, as he passed it onto the road, this orange teardrop-shaped light, very large, appeared in the road, almost like a watchdog, like, okay, I'm watching you, don't come back. And so he kept driving, and as he went away, the light receded back again. And so he brought us out to the site, and where he saw this thing was a 30-foot patch of dead grass. And you know, we were really excited, like, wow, this is really strange. We went out there, and well, our first clue about how swampy this area actually was, deceptively swampy, was that the guy had waders, you know, that have the straps over it, and we're like, I don't know if we're dressed for this. And he's like, oh yeah, just in case, I don't think it's quite into the swamp. No, it's totally in the swamp. I was like stepping in such a way that my shoes didn't get stuck and all that. And so we went out, we took soil samples and vegetation samples. And then when we were out there, it struck us another weird thing about this 30-foot patch of dead grass is that there was fresh growth all through it, little green tufts poking up everywhere. So this had just happened 2 days earlier by the time we got out there. Then that grass is as much of an anomaly as anything. Like, did this weird UFO event cause the grass to die, or did the UFO event just happen to favor this area where there was already dead grass when it's a long stretch of road and it could have done this anywhere? So we did the samples and sent them to our lab in Missouri, and they came back and said that they believe that some natural made chemicals were the things that took the grass out. There was some sort of spill into that area, but that the grass was killed by that and nothing unusual. But that still doesn't take away from the fact that this thing wanted to be there rather than wherever else it could have been. And so that was probably the strangest case that I was on hand for this year. So it's never a dull moment. With our group, we can identify, good 80% plus of anything anybody reports to us. But every once in a while, you get this one where you're just like, wow, all sorts of reasons to start scratching your head over that one.
Yeah.
I read statistics that 2020, there was more UFO sightings. Is that what, did that happen in Michigan?
Yeah, Linden, Michigan. So there's two big reasons for the uptick in UFO sightings. One, due to COVID, more people home more often, therefore seeing more things in the sky. And the other thing about that was a real big year for Starlink satellite sightings. Those satellites that Elon Musk and his SpaceX sent up to boost internet around the world. These satellites launch them in chains of several of these satellites, and you see them, and it looks like a UFO fleet flying overhead. If you go to YouTube or whatever and look up Starlink satellites, when you see what these things look like from the ground, you'll see why all sorts of people were reporting them as UFOs. In fact, we had to, on our website, have this thing saying, did you see something that looks like this? If so, watch this video before you make your report. Because, going about halfway into the 2020, about one third of our sightings were these satellites. And so we're like, oh my gosh, take a look at this, everybody. And then the sightings started to drop off a little bit. Now people going back to work, people being able to recognize these satellites. So, our numbers drop a little bit, but of course, the phenomena is year round, year in, year out, everywhere. So, as long as we're here, I'm sure we're going to get at least a good couple hundred in Michigan every year.
Yeah, they listed different reasons, like you said, people had more time. They thought maybe the skies were clearer. And in 2020, there was less traffic as far as commercial airlines up there. But yeah, people had a lot more time on their hands. I don't know if you're going to be able to see this photo or not. Can you see some of that? There's a...
Yeah, in between the two clouds or something? Or no, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 right. Saucers.
Yeah. Now...
I see those.
You'd recognize that as a hoax?
It looks like a lamp to me, reflecting off of a window. But
yeah, I took a picture outside of my window, through my window, and it somehow... the globes from my ceiling fan showed up as a reflection, and it looks like there's about 6 flying saucers outside my window.
It does.
That's kind of thing that when we had Marie Cisneros on, she said that she used to welcome those kind of photos just so she would have a library of things that weren't UFOs. Oh, yeah.
Great point.
We had the same thing too in ghost hunting too, where you get reflections in the mirrors. Mm-hmm. You have the pareidolia where people think it's a ghost in there, and it's just the light and the shadows on the window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And unfortunately, go ahead, Kim. I'm sorry.
I thought during your story from the report in Michigan in June, I thought it was ironic that you never mentioned that the post office worker never took any pictures, because who doesn't have a cell phone next to them almost at all point of time, whether it's morning, noon, or night? Everyone has access to a cell phone. Why didn't this person, if he had even seconds to witness this anomaly along the road, why did not he not provide a picture or video or something?
Oh, in this case, it's easy. He was terrified. Again,
terrified. Just okay.
From the fact that his message was just this simple, call me, and you could just hear it in his voice. So he's on this dark road. There's no streetlights, no other traffic. It's 3:30 in the morning, and he's driving by himself, and he sees this. Yeah, and it startles him, I'm sure, at first. And then by the time he's passing it, he's processing it. And that's mm-hmm. when that orange teardrop light appears on the road behind him, kind of like a watchdog saying, you know, keep moving, keep moving. And then, so yeah, I'm sure he felt very threatened because.
Okay. You know, so he was so scared, he probably didn't think to take a picture or turn around and go back. He just kept motoring.
I admit I wouldn't have messed with that. It really? Clearly was engaging him. And
okay.
Oh.
It wasn't some cool thing off in a distance. It was right along the side of the road at a time where he was very alone and very late at night. And so, yeah, I don't blame him in this case.
Okay. Though,
certainly what you say, while not necessarily valid here, is of course valid in many situations where you wonder why somebody didn't take a picture.
Right.
One of the things that I'd like to say about that is that while a lot of these pictures and videos don't make it out publicly, MUFON is collecting quite a catalog of really cool UFO sightings taken with cell phones. It is not the case that this isn't happening. People are taking great pictures and great videos. Mm-hmm. I have a presentation that I do that's all pictures and videos with some really excellent sketches thrown in, but it's the videos that's the spotlight of this. And
right.
Yeah, there's some great ones. And of course there's ones where, people just don't know what they're filming. We don't get a lot of hoaxes. The hoaxers tend to bypass us. They don't want to mess with us and have them say, that's nothing. They want to just push it out on YouTube and get the clicks and get their 15 seconds of fame.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know that if they just showed it to us, I don't think they enough of them think that we wouldn't be able to just take it apart fairly quickly, which is what we do when we see these things online. Say, this isn't why what you think you see is not what you're seeing here. This is something different.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our viewers and listeners are ghost hunters, so they might not know what MUFON is, because
I
had talked to the gal in Arkansas and talked, she had seen something. I said, well, did you report it to your MUFON? Well, I don't know who that is. Do we have one? Yes, you do have one, because there's a MUFON in 50 states,
mm-hmm.
43 countries. It's like the largest civilian organization. Is there another organization that's bigger that's not civilian?
That's not civilian.
Deals with UFOs, because it says it's the largest civilian UFO.
Well, I guess, the other cases would be, say, commercial or governmental. And, MUFON has 4,000 plus members. So, I can't speak to what the government or the military has up their sleeves with how they're looking into this phenomena. I mean, Robert Bigelow has had a few different forays into this phenomena, and it's been funded by different government agencies and things like that. So, but as far as a grassroots civilian, there's nothing remotely our size. For the number of sightings we get in, I mean, the National UFO Reporting Center, they certainly get their ton of sightings like we do too. But the difference is that's just like a sighting warehouse. People submit their sightings. It's all there, unfiltered, uninvestigated. And so MUFON has our team of investigators to go out and look at it. So MUFON's been around since 1969. I haven't been around since 1969, but I have been part of MUFON since 93, been the state director since 2004. So, I get to see a lot of this, and it's a lot of investigation that needs to be done. We have about 100 members in Michigan at any given time. This has been true since the 90s. For some reason, as much as we advertise, as little as we advertise, it doesn't matter. We get about 100 people. And out of those, a small portion, somewhere between 6 to 10, are active investigators at any time. the rest of the individuals just enjoy the subject and enjoy talking about it and are there for sort of the lodge aspect, if you will, and enjoy being there ringside to hearing some of the great investigation stuff that we put out. So I certainly encourage anybody who's listening, if you want to join Michigan MUFA chapter, right now we have a donation model. So it's essentially free if you don't want to give a donation. We of course appreciate donations. We are a 501c3. We used to have a subscription rate because of when we were more hands-on, we would actually meet places. We had a paper newsletter, but now it's due to COVID, so much is digital that we don't need to cover the costs like we used to, but there are still digital costs to cover. And so real easy, just go to the MIMUFON.org, supply an email address, and you're on our a notification list. You get our PDF newsletter for free. You get to attend our Zoom meetings for free. And we did actually meet in person at Houghton Lake at the, I got the t-shirt, Michigan UFO Contact Conference.
Oh, cool.
And so that was really awesome. And so we had our meeting there, but our next in-person isn't going to be for quite some time. And I was trying to remember if that's where I saw Brandon, but it was actually in the one that Michigan Paracon, yeah, the month before. So yeah, I've been very
so it's this weekend.
I've been very
so
busy.
You don't need so in order to be a member of MUFON, there's really no prerequisites or you okay. don't require anything to become a member. What are the requirements?
Okay, so to clarify, because
yeah.
if you didn't ask, I probably would have not remembered and not said anymore. So
okay.
the MUFON International Organization is its own separate 501c3. It's its own group. That one does have a membership cost associated with it. And there are different price points of that that change just enough so that I can't keep it in the back of my head. But they have all the prices at MUFON.com to join. And then there is a free training to become a field investigator if you choose. And that has its own website. And then you take a test. And then once you're approved to become a field investigator, again, you have to be a member of MUFON's international group to be able to be an investigator. Then you get trained, you take tests, you are an investigator. And then depending on which state you're in, the chief investigator of any given state will give you assignments as they see fit.
Hmm.
So they're like our chief investigators are certainly the busiest people in any state as far as I've been able to see. As far as I'm concerned, they're like the quarterbacks and, here's a sighting, you. And, they're tirelessly working on these sightings. And I have such respect for chief investigators and all investigators everywhere in MUFON.
So MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, it's the oldest and largest UFO investigative body. And you're all volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Your purpose is a scientific study of UFOs for the benefit of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good mission there.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah. Brandon, there you go. Brandon's yeah. taking Bigfoot training, but I think maybe he should.
I want to get into the UFO stuff as well. So
yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
You never know when Bigfoot can come out of a UFO. You hear those stories. So.
I always keep all possibilities open because when you doubt stuff, you end up finding more weird stuff you would never expect to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, we talked about how this summer, all of a sudden, the government started releasing information that before they were withholding. And actually, it was somebody from our area, Grand Rapids area, Jack Bouchon. Am I saying his last name correctly? He was the radar. The guy that's
Jack Bouchon, yeah.
In 1994, he was the guy that reported the UFOs that were over Lake Michigan, Grand Rapids area. And it's like he got no support. He about lost his job at the time. And now he's been vindicated all these years later because of information that's being released by the government.
you're going to see him very public shortly, within the next few months. So he's done some stuff where he's going to be front and center, and people will see him, know his name, and he'll be a big deal very soon.
Well, it was
predictable. I don't mean to be coy, but I'm not supposed to talk about it.
Okay.
So that's about probably what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Okay. Fair enough.
It was reported on this show that, you know, in the next year and a half, 2 years at the most, that there would be no doubt in people's mind whatsoever of UFOs. You talk about it being statistically inevitable that there's life on other planets.
Yeah, just breaking down the number of potentially habitable planets and moons in the galaxy, and that's 50 billion. And then by the metrics that they have of mostly the data from Hubble. And then if you expand that out to 2 trillion galaxies that are possibly out there, you know, multiply 50 billion by 2 trillion. And if you assume that the Milky Way is an average galaxy, then yeah, you have just an insane number of possible planets and moons out there that might potentially sustain life. So if you are into the math, just multiply 50 billion by 2 trillion, because I can't keep that number in my head.
Yeah. Well, Brandon and I, we saw one of your presentations and you told us it was 100 sextillion possibilities out there.
Yeah.
And then there's been other guys that are doing the math on how the fact that it's even closer in the Milky Way, how close that civilizations are.
And then you could throw Drake's equation on that and whittle that down a little bit. But really, I mean, if you're dealing with numbers that big, you know, it's just, statistically inevitable is the best way to put it.
Now, there's some language that I wasn't real familiar with when Marie Cisneros was on, and you've used it too, the word flaps. Hmm. And you look up flaps, and Webster's doesn't know what flaps. he doesn't know it means anything to do with UFOs. Mm-hmm. Could you explain flaps?
You know, if you're looking for the origin of the word, I don't know that I know it. I don't remember learning it. I just remember always hearing it. And even like, I remember hearing it like, you know, so many decades ago and not being confused about what was meant by that, but who coined the term and how long it's really been used. I don't know. I would be tempted to think that it's not originally UFO oriented, but just something that was adopted by the UFO community.
What's the definition of it then? Flaps.
Well, it would be a short-term wave of sightings, a concentrated high presence of UFOs, UFO activity in a particular, usually in a particular area, but I suppose you could have a global flap. It just means a lot of activity in a short time.
So one of the things I came across was the big flap, the 1952 Washington flap. Mm-hmm. That's something you're familiar with. You talked about that on one of your presentations.
I have, yeah. So in 1952, there were a fleet of UFOs that were actually recorded flying over Washington, D.C., over the Capitol building. And there are at least 3 different reliable radar reports that also indicate that that was the case. Several pilots have reports of it as well. And it ended up being, because of that, the largest press conference from the United States military since the end of World War II, trying to calm people down and saying, you know, basically the message was, you know, don't panic, and no real solid definition of what it was that people were seeing. They didn't say swamp gas or, you know, temperature, this, that, or whatever. But yeah, it was quite a moment. And
it seems like they blamed it on the weather somehow. I don't know exactly how, but
yeah, I'm sure there were some elements you know, that would point to this, that, or the other. But you know, it was a time then that the United States had its series, previous series of UFO investigation efforts. You know, you had 52 was the beginning of Project Blue Book. After Project Sign and then Project Grudge, these short-term things in the late 40s, early 50s, and then in 52, the same year as this happened, the Air Force started Project Blue Book, which lasted 17 years, and they investigated over 12,000 sightings in that time, mostly trying to whitewash them and try to dismiss them, admittedly, then do real research into any of these. I happen to know a couple people who had sightings actually that appeared in Project Blue Book. And, you know, they tell the story of what happened and then they tell you how they recorded it. And yeah, you see from the very get-go, the way the information was documented, just, you know, onboarding this information was flawed and probably intentionally so. And then they take a false version of the report. And therefore, it's a in a form that's very easily for them to say to dismiss what the information they got in because they took it down wrong in the first place. And so it was a mess, yeah, obviously. And then, you know, the University of Colorado came in to audit it, but they were already in the back pocket of the government and military. And so, yeah, it was just a big facade. And one of the things I think is kind of interesting is a lot of people say, oh my gosh, with this report to Congress over the summer and these, you know, these groups from the Pentagon, you know, looking into UFOs, oh my gosh, you know, the government is taking this seriously all of a sudden. Like, you know, from like, you know, roughly 1950 to, you know, roughly 1970, it was a good 20-year chunk of a very public UFO investigation going on from the Air Force. And so then, you know, 50 years pass and the idea is brought out again. Really? The military's looking into UFOs? Oh my gosh. I mean, I'll take the attention. I'll take the fact that people are excited about the phenomena. It's not historically grounded with the respect to the attitude that this is the first time that the government and military are looking into this sort of thing. But yeah, and I, you know, I certainly have my opinions about how this information is being trotted out. You know, the stop me if I'm going too far on this, but if you notice the very first reports that we're seeing of these videos, they're out over the Atlantic, they're out over the Pacific, they're not over the mainland continental United States. So what the military is doing is saying, oh, look, there's some UFOs way out over there, just to get people used to the idea, just to get to test their reaction to it. You know, you're not going to see, you know, this UFO video over Utah or something like that, or Chicago or whatever. What they're doing is trying to ease into the subject. I think very shortly, it will be so obvious that we're being visited. Just the volume of information coming out that can't be controlled by the government and military. The number of people that are catching such great photos and videos, soon it'll be obvious, it'll be evident. And the government now needs to get in front of this. The military needs to get in front of this story. And they need to drip, from their perspective, they need to drip feed the information out over a series of years so that in a few years, however many years it takes, where it becomes obvious that we're being visited, and people say, how come you never told us? We're sure that you knew about this. And they'd be like, look, we've been putting this report out to Congress for years now. We've been very straightforward with you about this. And it'll be so confusing that people won't be able to focus their anger, direct their, you know, protest. And so they'll just have to take the fact that at least the government is being, the military is being open about the subject.
Yeah, well, I don't know how open, but at least it is saying they're going to be open.
Yeah,
I came across some information that I didn't know it was this close. Dayton, Ohio, Hangar 18.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, the bodies from Roswell were apparently brought to Ohio. So yeah.
You guys know that, Kim?
No.
Yeah.
When did this happen?
Well, Roswell, you know, was 47. And so the bodies were brought over and there's different stories about how long they were there. it's unknown. It's not considered to be the case that if they were there, that they're still there. It's generally considered that they're probably not there anymore. There's these sort of stories that leak out of Wright-Patterson every once in a while from people that work there.
Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm. Saying that they were aware that there were bodies there at one time, but probably not there any longer.
So now they're in Ohio?
They were brought to Ohio.
That close now, to us.
And then sent wherever, if they're not still somehow there. I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure it's like a shell game. Once Area 51 started to get the attention it's gotten, you know, they moved, you know, to other places, I'm sure. And so, yeah, you can tour Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, so I'm sure they get UFO questions all the time. And yeah, so it's probably the last place that they want to keep bodies.
Is there anything?
I'm sorry. Okay. Why has no member of MUFON International been able to visit these places where supposedly these bodies have been stored? I mean, you have absolutely no authority whatsoever to even attempt to connect with whoever is storing these bodies at this time.
As a civilian group, no, I'm sure we're, you know, we're one of the last people that they would want, because I mean, what we do is we blab UFO information, you know,
at their point,
you know, our
whistleblowers. You know,
as a public service, we want to put out the best UFO evidence. Right. So if they actually had something that, like that, that would go against our, you know, our charter, you know, so they would not want to show us anything.
Okay. Yeah. God, you would think they'd want to work with you or something, but that's just not the case.
There's been the question that once it becomes inevitable that the UFO reality is ongoing and present and all these things, that, you know, what would happen to a group like MUFON, who's got so many, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of cases we have, but we do.
Right.
And it, whether or not that the government would say, okay, let's work with you.
Right.
And sift through this together, and MUFON gets its higher status. Or another version of that story is that people bypass the government and go straight to MUFON and say,
right,
you know, you've been taking this seriously for years, show us what you got, or the media takes that approach. And then the other thing is that maybe people say, oh, okay, now that the government is telling us about it, we don't need these all volunteer grassroots groups. We're gonna get our information from the mainstream media, government sources, and then MUFON is not as important anymore. I don't know, any one of these things is possible.
Right.
And, you know, I'm just trying to push it over the finish line that, you know, I mean, obviously I want to identify a thing that's not a UFO, that somebody thinks is a UFO. That tiny percentage of stuff that is anomalous, either from accounts that I believe are credible or obviously stuff that I've seen, I know that there's something to this phenomena. And so I just, you know, the goal is, you know, for me, if the government and military comes clean to an extent that is acceptable, then I'd be fine to say, okay, you know, I've been doing this for decades. I can retire now. Mission success.
Yeah, totally. Well, I'd love to hear more about your second book. Because I would love to read it. And so a little preview would be nice.
Well, I guess in a nutshell, the first book that I wrote was about growing up having this type of phenomena.
Right. I remember that.
My very about first memory at age
about
two.
About the eight, you were such a, you know, at a certain age, this happened to you, and then so on and so forth as you grew up. The experiencer book.
Book one.
Yeah.
I noticed a lot of adjectives that you used in this book one, like menacing, powerful, terrifying, ominous, nasty, invasive, judgmental. Mm-hmm. That's the impression I got when I read your first book. Mm-hmm. I thought that changed a little bit by the time you got to your second book, how you thought maybe they were more like mentors, maybe trying to help you and guide you. Mm-hmm. Is that fair assessment?
They are very invasive in one's personal life. So again, the first book was about growing up with this phenomenon. Mm-hmm. The second book is how much this phenomena comes into your life and cares about what you would think should be mundane things to them. Where you live, who you are associating with, particularly who you have romantic entanglements with. And so it's a strange thing. You would think, like, why are they so interested in the soap opera aspect of our life? And it's, you know, I don't really necessarily have an answer, but when somebody talks about the phenomena, and like somebody's surfing the channels, they come across some UFO show and they like, oh, here's somebody with an abduction story. And it's when somebody has one of these types of events happen to them, they're generally frequent flyers, is another fun word you can take, Wayne, frequent flyers. They have these things that happen to them all their lives. And it's really tough to get the full grasp of what is happening to somebody by hearing one time that they were taken, and just as, you know, a single event, because it's much more than a single event. I mean, in the last year, I've learned so much that it's just like, this is like, I don't know, a gift that never stops giving. It's just an amazing mystery. And the watching the way that this everything ties together into life, that's the real story. And part of my mission with the second book, besides just saying, here's the next bunch of years that stuff happened to me, is that I think it's an important part of the story to share. When experiencers get together, that's the kind of thing that we talk about in these private experiencer groups. Like, oh yeah, you know, they, you know, my, you know, daughter said that, you know, they were visiting them and interested in their children, or, you know, certain people will end up moving places that they never thought they would move. And then it being a very activity intensive place, and just, you know, these ways that the phenomena intersects with our lives. That's the real sort of behind the scenes reality of the experiencer phenomena. You know, by this point, after so many decades, everybody's heard the story about somebody getting pulled out of their car, getting pulled out of their bed, maybe getting an implant, you know, these little one-off things. But that almost gives a disservice to the phenomena, because it makes it so petty in terms of the full grandeur of the things that happen throughout somebody's lifetime when they have these types of things happen. I know very few people who have one experience. You know, and I've met hundreds of people, and it's, you know, it's some version of this rich tapestry of living their day-to-day life. And every once in a while, these things come in and give their life a little nudge one direction or the other, or show an intense interest in some part of that person's life. Why? Are we that interesting? And for so many people to report this type of thing, are we their entertainment? You know, but it doesn't seem likely. It doesn't seem likely. But I mean, what part of this seems likely? It's just true. That's all it is. You know, it's not likely. It's true. And so, yeah. What is it? Frank Herbert. I got reacquainted with this quote recently when I watched Dune. It was like, life is a mystery, not to be viewed as a problem to be solved, but a reality to experience, something along those lines. And it really resonated with me that you have to embrace the mystery of it. You have to go with the flow, recognize these quirky little synchronicities that fill your life when you're not having a bigger experience. And it's a wild cosmic ride. And I'm sure there are corollaries to people who have experiences with a haunted house and other things like that, where you have this long-term relationship with a phenomena. And it makes life so very different. You walk down the street, you see your neighbors, and you know, you got to assume that almost none of the people that you see on a day-to-day basis are encountering life the same way that you are. And yeah, you know, it can be isolating. Meeting other experiencers can be exhilarating, because you can actually have those conversations. And one of the things I think is kind of funny too is that these experiencer get-togethers, when they happen, and they're fairly private affairs, you know, usually invite-only groups. But one of the fun things is to walk in the door and, you know, you just say, oh yeah, you'll never guess what happened to me last night. The dog was on the roof. You know, I don't know a story like that actually, but you know, just something just off, you know, just some, these wild stories that people have, or one, you know, that is a real one, like, oh my gosh, that UFO that I saw, my son also saw it a couple of days later. You know, just these, just out with it. And because it's part of our normal life and lifestyle. You can try to keep it at arm's length, but it doesn't keep you at arm's length. So
yeah, now, we used two of your poems for the intro. Kim did Charred Gray, which actually, well, you called it song lyrics. I think that kind of expresses the attitude that I felt in the first book where, yeah, you didn't really want to be going on these. Yeah, leave me alone. Why are you back? And then the second poem was Angel. That Brandon did, but Angel's actually a character. If you could expand on that.
that one's pretty personal. And I've been actually ruminating on that aspect quite a lot recently. The beings have, I think, a two-track agenda with us. One of these agendas, to set the table, I believe that they are primarily beings of consciousness, and that when they interact with us, there are two different ways they can interact with us. I have had a number of out-of-body experiences where I've been with them, and so that's a nice, easy way for them to, if they want to teach us something, if they want to communicate with us, because we are out of our bodies, and that part of our ego that is associated with our body is not there. And so you can have this perfect conversation with them. And it also means that they don't have to shut people off or figure out where to hide the UFO, et cetera, et cetera. So there's that. They, as spiritual beings, are interested in our spirit and respect it, you know, whole namaste, there we go, you know, with us and them. And then the other track is that they're interested in our physical bodies, which I believe they don't really look at as us. When they come to us physically, I believe that they are able to pop consciousness into a physical form, kind of like a bio puppet, just to make up a term for it. And then that is how they interact with us physically. When they don't want to be physical, when they don't need to be physical, they pop consciousness out and there you go. But there is a physical ground game here that they're running. And it seems like the intent of that is a big part of it is reproductive. And which, you know, you think like any pharma, you know, part of that whole scenario is, you know, reproduction, keeping your farm going. In this case, us, you know, we're the animals in this scenario. And so they do with our bodies without much respect because they don't see it as us. They see the consciousness as us. And that when we're in physical form and we're freaking out, it's just because we're confused. It's okay from their mind. It's okay. We know you're confused. We're just going to get through this. And next time you're out of body, you'd be like, oh my gosh, yeah, me thinking that I was my body and not just a vehicle. So in a situation like that, the case with Angel, when they brought her into my room, I think they were just trying to figure out how I would react. And I was not enthused that they did that. But she seemed to be having an even worse time with it. Like, oh my gosh, they brought me here and they put me in this stranger's room. And so it was awkward for her. It was awkward for me. They were very interested in how we were going to interact. And I wasn't going to do anything. What do you do? You know, somebody brings someone into your room. So I said, to them telepathically, just to do anything, because it seemed like we were at some sort of standoff. I said, what's her name? And they said to me telepathically, yes, yes, what's her name? Like they want to meet a neighbor. So I said, how about Angel? It was harmless. It was complimentary, I thought. It was, you know, whatever, Angel. And they were very excited about that. And I could see them telepathically just joyful about it. You know, they're not, they don't have much in the way of expression, these little gray guys. But they were very happy that I named her. And then that was it. That was the episode. And they're like, okay, let's go. And you know, it's just such an odd thing to, among all the odd things that happen. And in this case, it was not just me by myself. I was concerned, you know, for someone else involved in this, what was happening.
Yeah. What can you describe, Angel? Was it a person or alien?
You know, okay. So I originally, and this can count even as an edit in my book, right? I originally thought that she was a hybrid. She was small bodied, but upon a deeper investigation, reflection of it, I'm not going to go into too much detail. It may come out at some time, who knows, not anytime soon. But I believe that they actually brought a young girl into my room. And now when I look back at it, and that when I got upset about that factor, they have a way of screen memory is the term, if you've ever heard it. They said, oh no, she's not a person. She's a hybrid, you know, part you, part us. She, you know, she's from UFO land or whatever. So you don't have to worry. But that I think got things really off on the wrong track when they wanted to see human interaction, but then they had to cover their tracks and say, you know, oh, okay, you're upset about this. Okay, so we're just going to have you see things, tweak what you're seeing slightly different. People do have experiences with hybrids. And they knew that I was aware of the phenomena, and I think they used that in my situation. There is a, just to give another example of a screen story, if people aren't familiar with how some of these things work, Mike Clellan, a UFO investigator, also across many different fields of mystical and paranormal things, he's often known as the owl man in the phenomena because he is an expert on owls. He's had experiences with UFOs and owls. People give him their owl stories, and he's written these books, Messengers, and the second one, really essentially about UFOs and owls. So anyway, just to give his background, he has a story of this woman that was walking through the woods, and she saw a little gray entity in the woods. And she's like, oh my gosh, you know, and she starts to freak out. And then the being says to her telepathically, repeatedly, quickly, owl, 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 owl. And then all of a sudden she saw an owl in front of her. And so what it seemed to be happening is that the being probably didn't turn into an owl, but just telepathically said, this is how you see me. This is how you see me. This is how you see me. I'm an owl. I'm not a gray being. And then, yeah, she said she very clearly saw an owl at that point. And then the owl went back into the woods. So they can really mess with you. Some people see deer, some other animals in terms of screen memory. So this in terms on the grand scale of things was probably not as big of a trick as making somebody think that they're an owl.
Wow. Just a clarification. In book one, you say experiencer is pretty much the same as abductee.
For
listeners and viewers out there. I come across the book by Brian Hunter called Aliens, The Alien Agenda. Is that someone you're familiar with? Is that worth checking out?
Mm-mm, not really familiar, sorry.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
no disrespect if he's done great work. I just am not
familiar. Right. You know, I thought maybe you might know because just of your experience in the field. We kind of need to move on, because we've been talking for about an hour already. So shout out. We always do a shout out to our previous guest, and it was Chetan Noir.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You run into Chetan, I think, quite often. That was our Halloween episode. And one of the things we talked about was the Alaskan Kushtika. And see, I had it as an otter man. I know she described it differently, but evil shapeshifter anyway. And then we did a shout out at that time to 222 Paranormal,
mm-hmm.
Joe Shortridge, who was recently in the hospital. And I know you know him too, because you were ready to fill in for him. So shout out to those guys. He's doing much better. He is going to be our next guest. So that's upcoming for us and ongoing will be 222 Paranormal. I want to do a shout out to Justin. Justin did this picture of zombies because we talked about zombies, and Justin is, who's Justin?
He's my oldest son.
Yeah.
He's 24.
Talk about synchronicity.
He had colored that earlier that afternoon for Halloween, and he had no clue that our conversation that same evening was going to turn into like a zombie conversation.
Right.
And so then afterwards, I thought, I'm going to give that as a gift to Wayne, right? Because he kind of brought up zombies during the podcast, and my kid had just made this little piece of art, and I thought, I'm going to gift that to Wayne.
Right. The intro was a poem I wrote entitled Zombie Apocalypse, because for Halloween, we just bring up different topics with Shatane.
Right.
But, and then so, we also talked about Portlock, which is the ghost town in Alaska, is because the Bigfoot's chased everybody away. It's now a ghost town. That's the name of the town that we talked about.
Hmm.
And then upcoming, I'm guessing you have upcoming. I know you've been doing a lot of things ongoing.
So I'm not sure when this airs. So what I'm about to say, maybe in the past, by the time it gets out, but this Saturday, so just 2 days from now, November, that'd be 13th. Yeah, I am speaking at the Old Mill Parafest in Dundee. It is a fundraiser for the museum there. This is their 8th year doing the conference. And I've spoken at, I think, at least half of these conferences that they've had there. And it's a great mix of paranormal and Bigfoot, and I'm the UFO guy. And so if you go to, if you look up Old Mill Parafest, you'll be directed to the page for that. Whether or not this comes out at a time where you're able to see it, the conference is ongoing. So I'm certain I'll probably have one next year as well. Mm-hmm. Conference-wise, that's my last one of the year. I've had quite a few this year. And then I have a library presentation in January to kick off next year in Warren. And that'll, I'm not sure if that's in person or in Zoom. I think it's in person. I don't know. Yeah. That might change. And then on from there. But you could definitely, and I need to update my website, experiencer.me. So the word experiencer.me is my personal website. And, or you could go to MUFON.com or MIMUFON.org to find out more about MUFON, either internationally or our state chapter.
I'm hoping I get to see some more presentations. Brandon and I went and saw you. You're over like in Plainwell area.
Mm-hmm.
Over here on the west part of Michigan, but you do new UFO cases, UFOs over Michigan, and high strangeness UFOs cases. Maybe you've added another chapter. I don't know.
Oh yeah, I'm doing the high strangeness thing for Dundee this year, and yeah, that one's always fun.
Okay, well, upcoming for us, I mentioned 222 Paranormal is next. Mm-hmm. And then here's an announcement I hadn't made yet on any show. My last show is going to be in December. Mm-hmm. And then Brandon and Kim might carry it on. They're talking about, they're definitely going to carry it on. And it's going to be a different format, I'm sure. You know, they're going to do their own thing. But mm-hmm. I need to concentrate on focusing on my family. So that's what I'm going to be doing next year. I may come back because WKTV wants me to come back. So I may come back and do special shows. So not necessarily out of it completely, but I am going to take a time off. So
yep.
really out of time, but for final thought, real quick, you know, William Shatner just was shot to the edge of outer space, I say. I mean, they say he went to outer space. I don't know. The Blue Origin space flight, the rocket. So you guys would think you'd like to do that, get shot into outer space. Shatner was 90 years old. He made it there and back. So is that something you'd like to do? What do you think, Brandon?
It'd be cool to check out space, but getting up, I'm afraid of heights. So I think a lot of it I want to enjoy. It'd be cool to see space, but I'd be freaking out a lot of the time going up there, to be honest.
What do you think, Kim? You ready?
No, and I'll tell you, I've been about to the closest experience that you can have with something like that. I kid you not, there's a ride at Epcot in Disney called Mission Space, and they actually put you in a capsule, and it's about the closest experience a civilian can have to go into space. And you can see yourself go up, you can feel the G's pushing you back, and I was ready to puke.
Right. Well, I ain't saying I wouldn't puke. I ain't saying I wouldn't.
Oh, I would, because I almost did on that ride at Disney one time, and I was like one and done with that bugger.
What do you think, Bill? Mr. Konkoleski, you want to get shot into to the edge of space?
I think my little gray friends have more reliable rides to get there, so maybe I'll hit them up.
Right. Well, that was what kind of my question for you.
Yeah.
I mean, when was the last experience, last abduction, in your 20s?
More recently.
Oh.
Much more recently.
What if they knocked on the door? Are you ready to go again? You done with that?
I really don't think they're done with me, and I don't think I'm done by a long shot. You know, it's interesting. The experiencers that I had befriended back in the 90s and gotten embedded into an experiencer support group, you know, the abductee support group, we call it at the time. It's an interesting thing. Everybody all said at the same time, like, oh, this is weird. All of our, you know, all the stuff that was happening to us just kind of dropped off. And now I'm still friends with all those people, and everybody is saying the same thing, that it's back. Wow. So, yeah. Why the hiatus? I don't know, but and people that outside of our group, certainly people aren't seem to be in different cycles of relationships with these beings. But this group that I've been in, everybody has been saying things have been getting really strange lately. So I think the phenomenon is about to kick back into action, and I don't know. I guess I'm ready.
Okay, well, stay in touch. Let us know how that works out. I'm definitely interested in that. Yeah. I will come back for another show. I will come back.
Number three.
Yeah, I'll come back for that. Inspirational thought, and then the show is over. And this is out of your book also. You talk about an old proverb, maybe a Chinese proverb. It says, the person who says that something cannot be done should not interrupt the person who is doing it. So don't stand in the way of progress or progressive thinking. Keep an open mind about things. That's the show. Thanks so much, Bill.
One second.
Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, hold on.
Can you hold your coffee cup up? I want to see the picture.
Oh.
Yeah, what is...
Okay, here's one side.
Oh my goodness, look at that. Hello.
Obviously, people give me things that are fun for my birthday and Christmas and whatnot. So, yeah.
Artwork on
there. It's nice. Oh. And I want to say, Wayne, thanks so much for having me on your show, and good luck with your everything going forward.
Yeah, I'll be in touch real quick. Peace out.
Hey, bye, everybody. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Family-owned Palermo Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast, located at 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-531-8300.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.